Hello and welcome to episode 13 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we'll be talking about Looney Labs Pyramid Arcade, 22 games in a single box. Take a closer look at all it has to offer. But as always, first we go off topic for some news, announcements, and feedbacks.
Yeah, this week we have feedback.
Oh my goodness.
I know.
Real feedback from a real person that we don't know.
Wow. That's so cool.
I know. So I think it's only right that it's read in a British voice.
Okay. I can do that. Yeah. All right. I haven't read this yet.
No, this is cold. You're just going to be reading
cold. Because I'm really excited. I want it to be a surprise. Okay, here we go. Twitter comment from Andrew Fayash, I hope I'm saying that right, of Gaia Games. Hello, Chris. I just started listening to your podcast about a week ago. I'm through episode 6 so far. Just wanted to say the show is quite enjoyable and quite interesting. Ooh, that's not bad. Quite. Yeah. Not just topic and content-wise, but also that you've got quite a trifecta of playstyles between the three members. Only big one you're missing is the chaos player, someone that... once they know they can't win, likes to just cause mayhem or play crazily just to see what happens and how everyone else deals with it. Anyway, this is a long message. Just wanted to write in and say, keep up the awesome work. I'm sure you guys will get a solid audience base sooner than you think with the quality of show you've been producing so far. Wow, that's awesome.
That's so nice. Thank you, Andrew.
Yeah. And
I agree. We don't necessarily have a chaos player in this particular group.
No.
I think we've played with chaos. Spencer could be a chaos player.
Is a little chaotic.
He could be a chaos player. We have Sydney likes to basically take control of like optimal moves. She's that optimal moves player. It's like, this is how we should play.
Mm-hmm. She'll tell everyone what their optimal move is. Yeah. Well, she tries so hard not to. It's so cute.
Although Chris, you're guilty of that as well.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But I just try to help. A little bit.
Sure. Yeah. You're a very kind guy.
These are the kibitzers.
Eventually.
Just so you know, this is a move you could make.
You could do that.
You guys are good, though, because you're not pushy about, like, why aren't you making this move?
Right.
That's no one wants to play with those people. Yeah. I still play with you in Sydney, so it can't be that bad.
I think at the beginning, you want to be, like, when someone's playing their first time, giving them two or three options and explaining why those are good options isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. About halfway through the game, though, I'll just kind of step back.
Sure.
Unless I'm playing something like Homeworlds where I'm describing every option that you could do. Like, okay, I'm going to let you do that, but here's how I win. Now let's reverse before you did that and we can start up from there.
Well, Homeworlds is a tricky one. It's a deep game with deep strategy.
Which we'll get into in a lot more deepness in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But no, Andrew, thank you for tweeting us. Please keep them coming. You've only through episode 6, so at some point, maybe you'll catch up to actually the relatively okay ones. Episode 4 is when we turned. We added Kitty so that things got a little bit better.
Everything better.
Absolutely. But we're still learning. We want to make the show enjoyable to a lot of different people, and it means a lot to us that, you know, people out there listening and getting some enjoyment from it.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. I do have a question about the chaos player, because I feel like you guys have played a bit more than me, and you might have encountered this kind of player before. And, you know, is the chaos player someone who's, do you think, looking for the drama and kind of wants to be, is doing it for intention? What's their motivation?
I think you can have two reasons. One, you can be like, okay, well, I can't win, so I'll just make it interesting for myself.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And there's the other, oh, I can't win, so I'm just going to spoil it for everyone else.
Ah, okay.
The former, that one is okay.
Yeah.
You know, they're just trying to keep the game interesting.
Sure.
The latter, where it's like, okay, I've lost anyway, so I'm just going to make everyone as unhappy as I am. That's the kind of player you probably don't want to do that often.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm thinking we should spend an entire episode talking about gamer player, like
player styles,
gaming groups, things like that.
That's a good idea.
So
in fact,
in honor of Angie's tweet, that is what our next episode is going to be about, is, you know, basically gaming groups and the different kinds of people you might meet randomly versus, your friends groups and, you know, whether or not you're willing to tolerate friends more than strangers, you know. Maybe sometimes you're like, you're my friend, but I don't have to game with you, so I'm willing to tell you that. Where a stranger, you're like, I don't know you. I really don't like playing this game with you, but I'm not comfortable enough to walk away from this table right now. So we'll see. We'll get into that.
Yeah, that should be a fun episode next week.
Yeah. Let's see. I have one Kickstarter game that I've backed. It's called Deep Madness. It's a co-op horror game. So it's recently closed, actually. It's lots and lots of miniatures. Another one of those, here's a whole huge box of miniature games. Nice. I don't know why I need more miniatures, but if I ever need to.
Co-op horror game sounds like fun.
But it does. It is the fact that it's a co-op horror game, it does seem cool. And it's one of those bigger, lots of pieces type of things. So I have a few horror games, well, a few co-op games coming. By the way, we live in Chicago, and when we record, apparently the neighborhood starts to burn down.
You just notice for the first time that they've been happening all day. I was sitting in Michigan one day reading a book in a hammock, and all of a sudden I realized that all the people around me are like, oh, what's going on? And they're all talking because there's a fire truck you can hear driving. And in Michigan, that doesn't happen up in this quiet lake. I'm sitting there. I hadn't even noticed the fire truck noise, and they all made fun of me for being too much of a city folk.
Yeah. So we try, the microphones try to pick up not the background noise, but sometimes when fire trucks blare into the windows, there's not too much we can do about it. So let's see. WindyCon, this entire, we're off topic, but we're almost starting to get on topic. Right. Normally our off topic lasts a little bit longer, but because WindyCon and how that loops into Pyramid Arcade and all of that,
right,
I think we're just going to go directly to on topic, and then I'm going to tell a WindyCon story.
Nice there.
So I'm going to press this button.
In this episode, we're talking about Pyramid Arcade, 90 pyramids, 8 mini game boards, 1 folding game board, 2 plastic game boards, lots of game boards, 9 dice, deck of playing cards, some twin win card. What's a twin win card? Well, we'll find out. A jousting bag, turn token, instruction book, oh, and a deck of cards that summarizes each game. Wow, we've got a lot to talk about.
Yeah. So, a year ago, I went to this little convention in Chicago called WindyCon, and I met Andy Looney there. Not in really in person so much. I did play some games with him in his Andy versus Everybody games that he does at conventions. Mm-hmm. I think I was playing a version of Flux, maybe Firefly Flux at the time.
Right.
And he was on a panel about podcasts, and I was interested in podcasts. Mm. And he does a podcast with Keith Baker. I think I've mentioned this before, called The Download. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, all right, well, he's an interesting guy. He basically says, you know, we're game designers. We just talk about game design in this podcast. I'm like, I'm interested in game design. I want to listen to this podcast.
Right.
So I've been listening to the podcast for a year now.
Right.
It's not really about game design. I'm not sure. I think one episode in the last 50 I've listened to has actually had some game design elements in it. It's mostly about, like, they talk a lot about media. They really like Mr. Robot. But they also like Keith Baker really likes a lot of the same superhero shows that I like. You know? Mm-hmm. He talks about those things and stuff, which is interesting. But they also talk about stuff that they're working on. Mm. And at the time, Andy Looney was working on a Pyramid Arcade box, which he was talking about Homeworlds, which is a pyramid game, and Pyramid Arcade, which was all of like over 20 years worth of work that he was going to put all in one box. Mm. And they were going to kickstart it. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm really interested in this Homeworlds game, which we finally get to talk about this episode, like, in detail.
Ooh, exciting.
And so I'm like, all right, I'm going to kickstart this game. Mm. And part of the Kickstarter was every day he was going to do a video on how to play one of the 22 games in the box. Mm. So every day I'm checking back, waiting for him to, like, teach Homeworld, because at this point I don't know.
Right.
And he's, like, taught, like, 15 different games, and they're all really cool games. So we'll talk about them. We get to the Homeworlds one, and his wife, Kristen Looney, does not like playing Homeworlds. So they did this little setup where they're sitting down, and Andy's like, okay, and now we're going to teach the next game. And Kristen turns around and is like, wait a minute, this is Homeworlds. I'm out of here. And then she gets up and leaves.
Right.
I found out since that she's never actually played Homeworlds.
Right.
Ever. She's just like, nope, not my game. I'm like, all right. So what they did is they played a full-size, well, like a jumbo-sized pyramid game on the floor that was from a website called Super Duper Games, which apparently people get together and play Homeworlds on.
Right.
And they were just going through, and Andy Looney was – he was – I don't know why I say Andy Looney all the time. It's a cool name. I'm just going to keep saying Andy Looney. And he was narrating what was happening in the game, but not necessarily – and like if you were listening to a commentator on a football game or soccer game or whatever you're not going to pick up the rules of the game from this, but it still seems interesting. Like, oh, I want to figure out why they're doing that or why they're doing this. So then I went to Super Duper Games and started playing it there. So that's where my first few games of Homeworlds came from, is trying to figure out the rules there. Cue the fire trucks again. And so then I'm waiting for Pyramid Arcade. But in the meantime, I bought like a set of Homeworld pyramids and then another set so that Sydney could have one, and then different colors. And then I bought pink hijinks because, well, you got to have the pink pyramids. And
sure.
So that brought me full circle into having all of these pyramids that I already had. Right. Part of the Kickstarter is you could buy the pyramid system without the pyramids, just buy the box. And I'm like, that's silly. Why wouldn't you get the pyramids? And now I realize, like, oh, I have like 200 pyramids. This might be why. But the pyramids in this box are way nicer than the ones that have been made. They're like, like a nice feel, nice weight, nice rounded corners to them. But anyway, that convention is what started me on this whole pyramid thing in the first place.
Wow.
And now we're back here. This weekend we went to WindyCon again. Andy Looney wasn't there. I don't even know that there was. He was the gaming guest of honor. There really wasn't any gaming guest of honor.
Right.
But I did teach a whole lot of pyramid games this weekend. One of the guys is like, okay, wait a minute. Where do I get this game? I'm like, well, they have it in the dealer's hall. You can go buy it. We played a couple games on a game of Homeworlds. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to go buy this. So he just went and spent $77 and like, yep, walking home with this right now. Nice. So I need to get a commission, I guess. But anyway. Anyway, that is my summary of the weekend and how this particular episode came about.
And so now, it was Andy Looney's, dream a year ago to produce it, and he's actually kickstarted it, and you can go and buy this, right?
Yes. Yep. This is available in stores now. You can also go to looneylabs.com and buy it there. Oh, nice. I think he refers to this as his magnum opus.
Ooh.
Yep. It's actually right on the back. My magnum opus. That's the very first thing. The back cover of the instructions is 22 haikus.
Wow.
So that's how the back of the cover is.
That's awesome.
The instruction book for most games are like, okay, fine, here are the rules. And the rules are certainly in here. But there's so much personality in here as well.
Oh, nice.
Yep. You get to page 47. Remember, there's 22 games in this in this set, so there's a lot of pages. Nanofiction intermission. Have you guys heard of nanofiction?
No.
Nanofiction is a story written in exactly 55 words.
Whoa.
And apparently, that's where the Looney Lab pyramids first came from, was his nanofiction.
So wait. Because this is what I'm not clear on. Did Andy Looney create all of these games, or did he popularize them?
He created 20 of the 22 games in this box.
Wow.
So there was one called Volcano that was created by his wife, Kristen.
Yeah.
And Homeworlds, which was created by his friend, John. But other than those two games, the rest of them were all Andy Looney games.
Wow. So Homeworlds, in a way, really inspired him to make all these other games that go with it that his friend had made Homeworlds.
Well, if you go way back the history of this, it actually was it's a game that's not in the initial box, but it has ice. It's not Ice Towers. It'll kill me. I will remember.
This is really great radio, Chris.
So
he's staring at the book.
Ice House was the first game created by John Cooper and Andy Looney. It was the first pyramid game.
Him and his friend made it together.
Yeah. Well, John probably, he did most of the design, but it was based on Andy Looney's story and like components that he took that from.
Sure.
And basically what he says is from that point on, he was able to, they just took that and just started creating more and more games.
Right.
And you can see that in each one of the games that you read, there's a bit of a history behind like how this came about and where it came from. Nice. So it really is like, there's a lot of heart in this box.
Mm-hmm.
It's really intense on this.
And not only that, it looks gorgeous as well.
Yeah.
Like the design is so cool and retro. Yeah.
It has a retro feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I want to read this 55 words, but I believe this is the story that started the whole pyramid thing. The tavern. We'll start with that one. Five guys drove around one night in an old VW Beetle looking for adventure. They arrive at a mysterious tavern where they learn to play an unusual game with pyramids. Later, they were never able to find the tavern again, and the barmaid's phone number was bogus. At least they remembered how the game worked. So this is like the nano fiction he was writing about these pyramid games. So there's a number of them in here. Go to page 47 of the rule book and you'll see a few of them. But I think it's really interesting that, you know, what he had visioned eventually came to life. And over 20 years later, it's not just the there's 22 games in this box. There are hundreds of games online that use these same pyramids.
Oh, wow. People have then almost like crowdsourced their own games based on the same system. Wow.
So I guess that's enough history.
Yeah.
I'll try to cover a little bit. So let's see. We've played, I think I've played 20 of the 22 games so far.
Right.
Josh, you've played about a half dozen or so.
Yeah.
Kitty, you've gotten at least a dozen.
I think so.
So let's like just jump right in. Kitty, what's one that really like jumped out at you as one that you liked?
The one we played tonight is Twin Win.
Twin Win.
And that one was really fun. I really liked that one, especially after having played some of the other games. So we keep talking about these pyramids, but if you haven't seen one before, they're little translucent plastic pieces. They come in three sizes, a one pip, a two pip, and a three pip, going from little to big. They can be nested, so they are little, like, Russian nesting dolls.
Yep.
I don't know if you guys can hear me clinking around with them. I'm totally playing with these. They can be turned into little Christmas trees. They stack up into a Christmas tree. And most of the games you play, you will either be trying to make a nest or a tree or collect a set of the pyramids in the same color or of the same size or try to get them in a certain position.
Yep.
Covers about, like, 15 of the 22 games, I'd say. Yeah.
Sometimes size matters. Sometimes colors matter. Sometimes it doesn't matter at all.
And staying on the looks, like, it really does look cool. And you've made the comment before, Chris, where you and Sydney would take it into a cafe and people would just be like really interested and come over. What are these colored pyramids and why are you moving them around? And it kind of looks like one of those games you saw in the background of Star Trek.
It like does it. Look like it's, right? Yeah. I also love the sound of the little pyramids. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I keep clinking them around.
She told us where she was going to jingle them.
Yeah. I warned you and I did it.
All right.
So Twin Win.
Yep.
You have two cards that you are dealt at the beginning of the game.
Yep.
And you are moving. You've got a little circle board where there's little arrows and you can move in the direction of the arrows.
Which is clockwise
around the board. Or in and out of the middle, but only from the four points. There's four other points that do not move to the middle.
Right.
So you have your secret objective to make a certain color, either tree or nest. And you get two moves on each turn. You get to move one piece, two squares.
Or two pieces, one square.
Or two pieces, one square. You can split your movement. And you're trying to make your thing on the board somewhere. And everyone else is also trying to make their things and it's just chaos. And I like it because you don't know what anyone is up to. They look like they might be doing something, but they might just be trying to get those pieces out of the way so they can move the real piece they want. It was fun.
Yeah. So you might have an orange, you might have a card that says you need an orange nest and a purple tree and you just need one or the other. But Josh could be going for a purple nest. So me trying to make my purple tree allows Josh to get the right moves to get his purple nest in there. You can also use one of your moves to swap your objective with a random new one. If you're like, okay, I'm never going to get this purple nest, so I'm going to swap it away. But it's one of the, there's no randomness to it, short of what you're dealt. But ultimately, there's no randomness to it. And it's really a lot of just trying to figure out what everyone else wants.
Oh, yeah. That was the fun bit. It was kind of like sussing out, seeing Chris move two green ones around. I'm like, he's going for something green. I'm going to have to mess him up on that somehow.
Yep. And that is like the learning this particular game, and I would say most of the games in the book are essentially as easy as Kitty just described.
Yeah.
Yep. Here you go.
Most of them.
Yep.
Not all of them.
Not all of them.
Most of them are. Yeah, 5-10 minutes to, like, not just, like, read the instructions and teach the game, but, like, to get really the game,
well,
you just have to play a couple rounds, and they're most of them are very fast-moving games.
Yeah. I would say over half the games, you can learn and be done with your first game in under 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, but you want to play another one.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
And a lot of times you want to play the same one over and over. Mm. I've been doing a lot of, as soon as we finish one, okay, let's learn the next one.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, some of them are a little bit more casual than others. But Twin Winds is cool. Like I said, there has a deck of Twin Wind cards in here. As far as I know, the only game that uses the Twin Wind cards right now is Twin Wind.
Mm-hmm.
But those cards could easily be used for other games that could be online.
Yeah. We'll have to look up in the wider world. I feel like I have to master the games in the book before I'm going to start
searching out more. There is one that has gotten a lot, I've heard a lot about, which is called Zendo, which may have its own game coming up. I'll talk briefly a little bit more about that at the end, because I don't know a lot about it. Mm. But it's another one of like a heavy strategy, but sort of, yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, there's other things there. Josh, what about you?
Well,
not Homeworld stuff.
Not Homeworld. I won't dive into that just yet. So
don't put me to sleep yet.
We played Homeworld is amazing. Don't even. So we played a game called Black Ice.
Yep.
And when I explain games, I like to start high level, and I liken this to a game called Mastermind. Have you guys played Mastermind?
That's exactly what I was going to compare it to.
Right, exactly. Uh-huh. So if you've ever played this before, it's a very popular game. Mastermind was a game where you'd hide a four-color code behind some sort of barrier, and the other person is trying to guess through trial and error what color code you've done. You know, have you done red, yellow, green, blue, in that order? And in this game, both of you are ignorant of the color code that's in the middle. So there'll be like three or four pieces. You can decide how many you're going to put down.
Base game is three.
Right, base game is three. And there are some pyramids that are hiding colored pyramids under them. So there's black pyramids in the middle. Underneath those are some colors. Now, there's no duplicates. So you know there's going to be either red, yellow, green, or
blue,
you know, or you could mix it up. But you're only going to have four colors. And then the fourth color is going to be in a bag. So you've got three out there. You're not sure what order they're in, what arrangement they're in. And then you have your own arrangement of pyramids in front of you that you're then going to roll some dice and be able to move colored pieces onto those ones to match the code. Now, the dice do that you're rolling do different things. You can switch things around, either your own pieces or the middle pieces. You can clone what the other person did. There's a wild card, or you can either move pieces on there. And
you can also peek.
Oh, you can peek as well, yeah. So you can look in the middle.
Look what's in the middle, zap a piece, and switch it with the one in the bag.
Yeah. And so because it keeps moving, you really struggle to remember, wait, what configuration is it currently in? I knew it like 5 seconds ago, and now things have moved. Chris just switched something around and then zapped something. Did he move first, or did he zap first? And you just... Oh, man. It was stressful,
I just figured out what this game is like. It is like a combination Mastermind and Simon.
Yes. In my head, I'm thinking red, blue, green, orange. Yeah, red, blue, green, orange. Red,
yeah,
blue,
Simon.
Green,
what's Simon?
Simon, you don't...
Oh, I don't know Simon.
Oh, Josh. Simon is a game that was...
So patronizing.
No, it's just... You make me think about, like, all the things I think everyone knows that... Right. Are not actually common knowledge. It's of a like, oh, maybe it should have been Oh Kitty. Simon was a game that was very popular like late 80s, early 90s, maybe. Like early, I think more early 90s. It is a circle electronic thing that lights up a pattern with red, yellow,
colors.
Green, blue. And you're supposed to, and it lights up the pattern, and then you follow the pattern, and then adds one.
So you're going to hit these things in the order that they flashed at you.
Yes.
Okay.
And the chain keeps blinking. So at first it's red. You press red. Red, blue. Red, blue. Red, blue, green. Red, blue, green. Red, blue, green, green. Red, blue, green, green. And you have to remember that pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So in your head,
and it just keeps going until you mess up.
Yeah. It sounds similar to that Bop It thing.
It was like the precursor to Bop It.
Yeah.
It is pre-Bop It.
Yeah, I see.
And it didn't talk. It just made these like beep, 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 brrr noises.
But that's what I was doing when playing Black Ice.
Yeah, is you're saying it in your head the same way. I'm looking at the pattern. I'm trying to repeat it to myself. I'm trying to ignore Josh's like, where are the snacks? Talk in the background. because I'm just sitting there repeating to myself, orange, red, blue, yellow, orange, red, blue, yellow. And I still messed it up.
I know. It's more difficult than you realize. I peeked and then put it back and then immediately forgot and lost the game. It was really embarrassing, but yeah, cool game.
One turn, Chris zapped and then double swapped the pieces. That was his whole move, was just like, all right, take everything kitty knows and turn it around. Oh. And I was just like, ah, and that's when I lost.
You are evil, Chris.
Well, the double swap put it in the exact reverse order from my mantra that was in my head. So I was just hoping it would mess her up.
Yeah.
And it did.
And it did.
I forgot that you zapped before you swapped. I actually remembered the swap, but the double swap was so confusing to me that I forgot that there was a green in there now. And
yeah, this is...
Oh.
This is the second, well, one of the most perfect games to play at a restaurant. There's a lot of them in here. So the pyramids are plastic. Like if you were to spill something on them, you wash them off, they're fine. There's two plastic boards that you could bring with you, but you literally wouldn't even need them. But the dice, you know, you can wash dice. There are a ton of games in here you can just bring and play at a restaurant.
Nice.
And they don't take up a lot of room because there's no board or anything. They just move it around. But Black Ice is a great two-player restaurant game. You know, it fits in your pocket easily.
Yeah.
All right, Kitty. Well,
what's one of yours? Come on.
Oh, there are a ton. We're going to save Homeworlds to the end. So one of the games in here that I think is interesting, just because of it looks really simple at first. And you're like, okay, but then once you start playing, you're like, oh, this is intense. And that's the co-op game in here. It's called Color Wheel. And the setup for this is there's a big plastic board that has a bunch of pie pieces on it. And you put all of the colored pieces on this board and you just kind of shake them out until everything rests in a spot. And then you start cleaning it up and making sure that each slice only has one pyramid in it. Now, when I say slice, there's actually one, two, three rings that go through this. So there's a lot of pieces on here. You then take all of the black, white, and clear pieces and set them aside. And that creates 27 pieces, which is really just a counter because that's how many moves you have to, between you and your friends, to swap pieces on the board until all of them are touching, of the light colors are touching each other.
You have a definitive amount of moves.
Yes. So you have 27 moves to make sure all of the yellows are touching each other, all the blues are touching each other. And it's challenging in such a way, because I don't think either of you played this with me.
No.
But it's challenging in such a way that you can't just start moving things next to each other.
Yeah.
Because you have to plan out where things can fit. Because you might be able to get all the yellows and blues together, but if you've left like three oranges in the middle, but you have six oranges someplace else, you have to, now I have to change everything around. And there's only two moves in this game. You can swap two pieces of the same color or two pieces of the same size. And normally you want to aim for size because that allows you to get colors in the same place, but sometimes you have to swap colors so you can get the right size in the place to swap that. And you can play it, like it says it's 1 to 5, and you can play, like, you take a turn, I take a turn, and go around. But really, it's kind of fun to just sit there and all, like, kind of figure it out together.
Right.
Again, it's just deceptively simple. But play it, and you're like, you want to do it again.
So there's no geographic limit in terms of the move, because you said you can switch sizes out. So you could be switching things from the other side of the board, right?
Yes.
That makes it so much harder.
Yeah, so it's not geographic when you swap.
Yeah.
It's any two pieces of the same color, any two pieces of the same size.
Because you're not just migrating pieces from one area to another. You are literally trying to, like, juggle it all in your head. Like, how am I going to do this?
Yes.
Wow.
Yep. And
the neat freak in me sounds like I would love this game.
Well, it's a great game to play with kids, too, because any co-op game is great to play with kids. There's a lot of great kids games in here. But like when you're just talking about Black Ice, it's probably not the greatest to play with like a six-year-old. Yeah. But here, if you're saying, oh, we have to get all the blue keys pieces together, and anybody can point at two pieces and say, oh, this, we could do this, and we could do this. And especially if you're playing with kids, if you forget to move a piece over or something or that, you know, on a strict count turns or whatever, you can do that as, you know, the person teaching the game.
Yeah.
But if you want to keep it strict, you can do that. They also have like options for timer style, head-to-head, rainbow style. So if you find it's too easy just to clump them together, you have to clump them together in rainbow order. So Roy G. Biv. So now you have to pay attention to how that's going. Mm-hmm. And there's even an escape room style, which I just noticed. So I'm going to read this out loud. Just to make sure everyone's fully engaged, I like to imagine we're all trapped in a puzzle chamber by some evil villain. If we don't finish before the time runs out, poison gas fills the rooms and we all die. So focus, people, please. We only have a few moments left.
Nice.
So, so I, like I said, pleasantly surprised by pretty much everything in here. But this is one where I'm like, And then when I played it, I'm like, okay, I'd play that again. And again. All right, Kitty, you're up again.
World War V.
World War V. Describe that one.
It is a Risk-style game, I would say. But, like, simplified. Each continent has been broken down into three territories. But the map is way more interconnected.
Yep.
At the beginning of the game, you place your pieces. And then you have, like, five actions you can take?
So you start out with... that's a great question. No, one action per turn.
No, but what are the... How many different actions are there?
Oh, right. So once you've placed your three, small, medium, and large, in your home territory, because every home territory only has three, from that point on, you can either grow, build, move, or invade.
Four.
Yep.
So you have four different actions you can do on your turn. If you have an empty spot in your territory, you can place a small piece in your territory.
Known as a build.
If you want to grow, you can, in your territory only, move a 1 to a 2 or a 2 to a 3. You can move into an empty territory. Just slide your piece in there. That's your turn. Or you can attack someone. So, or invade. So you point your triangle, your pyramid, at their piece, and you roll the number of pips you have on your die. So if you have a large pyramid, you roll three dice. I'm terrible at this. if you have a medium one, you roll two dice. And if you have one, a small one, you roll one die. That's how that works.
Yep.
And then if you roll higher, you move your piece into their territory. And they retreat into an empty territory if it's available. If it's not available, they will move down a size, and you don't get to invade them. Unless it is a small, they are removed from the board. Mm-hmm. And the win condition is you want to control one of your territories in your color country and all three territories of a different country.
Mm. Yep. And it's surprisingly... like cutthroat.
Oh, it was real cutthroat. Yeah. We played this, me and Chris and Sydney and Spencer. Yep. And it got like Sydney and Spencer were actually just like, it turned into like a
vendetta.
Like, yeah, they were just playing against each other, which enabled Chris to win because I couldn't take out Chris on my own. And Spencer had a chance. There was one move where I was like, all right, Spencer has to help me with Chris. And then Spencer's like, and I'm attacking Sydney. I was like, what just happened?
South America and Africa were having a little war over there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to come down from basically Eurasia, I guess, and take over the continent with all the kangaroos.
Australia.
That's the one.
Yeah, your home territory was Asia. I was in Europe. Yep. North America and Australia were empty. Mm. So Sydney started moving up from South America into North America. Mm-hmm. Chris started moving into Australia. So on Spencer's turn, or I moved into North America also. Mm-hmm. So on Spencer's turn, he was like, I'm moving into Europe. And just ruined my first three turns there for a while because I couldn't make any more pieces because he was hanging out in my territory. And then... vendetta. It was just craziness. And I somehow from Europe I ended up defending Australia.
did it get serious? It sounds like it got serious.
Oh yeah.
It was really serious.
It, honestly, it really does like, you know, we've talked about Risk before and how we all like Risk. It really does have that Risk feel.
Yeah.
But without all the complications.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like there's still a lot of strategy here, building, you know, adding your pieces. You want your bigs to be the ones attacking. Uh-huh. If a big can attack a small, you can almost always destroy it.
Right.
Because the small gets 1d6 to defend against your three.
Right.
But there was a lot of back and forth. And like, I would say mid-game, it started to feel like we're all looking and there's like so much on the board, pyramids right. everywhere. We're like, how do we win this? How do we not just keep going back and forth? And I'm thinking, yep, that feels exactly like Risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was really fun. So
like a speedy Risk.
Speedy, yeah. What, it took us like maybe 45 minutes,
half hour to 45 minutes. Okay. Yeah. And the only reason it felt long is because most of the games in this box you can play in a fairly short period of time.
Yeah.
So this was a longer game. Mm. But yeah, like my strategy for winning was essentially opening up a space that I could force someone to retreat into. Mm. So then I could then come in from a different direction and get into my third piece into Australia while forcing the other piece out. So I didn't have to actually destroy them. Nice. So, but World War
V. And if Spencer had put his piece there, it wouldn't have worked.
Oh, Spencer. Just got too hung up on his vendetta.
Yeah. He was going to have South America if it was the last thing he did.
Jumping to an extreme different, Josh, I know you liked verticality.
Verticality. Oh, yeah. So this game is like a pyramid Jenga, but you don't play with just one tower. And you don't start with a tower. So how this works is you roll a dice at the beginning that has some pyramids on it. And if it comes up with a small pyramid, then you're going to make a base of three small pyramids. And they all have to touch each other. And then you're going to place a card on top. Now, the next time you roll a dice, another size will come up, small, medium, large. And you have to use that to go onto the next layer. So you're going to go one by one, placing carefully with one hand onto the card, worried it's going to fall, and then add another one. Once you've got to three, another card. And you're basically building layer by layer. And we did pretty well. I mean, it was getting pretty high there. Like, how high did you get, Kitty? It was impressive. All right.
So to be fair, I had already lost. I lost at level two. But then my card, I just knocked one pyramid over. So I put it back up and kept playing because why not? Yeah, sure. You know, I admit that I lost. I'm not saying I won.
That's fine.
But I did build an 8-tall stack.
That's amazing.
I'm going to put up on our Facebook page
right now.
You
should.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, like you were saying before, it's a game you could play with kids. And it was just that classic Jenga feel where you're like, oh, this isn't gonna work, and then it all just goes and you're like, no. Oh, it was good.
It was terrible when we rolled small for the first level.
Because we had smalls on the first and second level.
Oh yeah.
And then by the time we got to the third level, which it went small, big.
Mm. Yeah. We all lost on the third level of that one. So we immediately were like, we have to play again. That wasn't fair.
Nope. So I think we decided that we're going to re-roll smalls on the very first level from now on, just so that you have a little bit of extra height to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
again,
it was a good time.
Dexterity game feel. It was good.
Yeah. Going from World War V to verticality, like just the huge swing in cerebralness and intensity. And it's really impressive. Like, how many different things
how
you can do.
How versatile
the
system is to make all these different types of games. Yeah.
Yep. Let's see. Flipping through, I do want to mention Treehouse, because Treehouse is actually a game that a lot of people may have heard of.
Right.
Of course, if you know anything about the pyramid system, you probably know about Treehouse, because they used to actually be sold in Treehouse packs, right, where you'd have one trio of both of five, black, green, red, blue, and yellow. Mm-hmm. And Treehouse, you put three pieces in the middle. There's the three black pieces in the middle, both the big and the medium are on their side, pointing away from each other, and the small is pointing up in the center. And then everyone else starts with a tree in front of them, so big, medium, and small on top. Mm. And you roll a die, and it allows you to aim, tip, hop, swap, and dig. Each one has a specific thing you can do to either your pyramids or the pyramids in the middle.
Right.
And you're trying to be the first person that matches. That's your pyramids matching the ones in the middle.
Ah.
So a very simple game. This can play up to 10 players. You just keep passing the die, you roll the die, you do what it says, you pass it on and keep going. You just kind of pay attention to what everyone else is trying to do. So I'm just throwing that one out.
10 players. Yeah, that's a good like party game, I imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's actually another one, which is just, as I'm flipping backward in the book, Pyramid Chambeau. Mm. This is another one that they recommend with 10 players. Well, with a bigger group. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you have the pink pyramids and the Kickstarter green pyramids, you can actually play these things up to 12 people. Wow. 10 is because that's how many colors there are in the box, basically. Mm-hmm. But Pyramid Chambeau is a strategic paper, rock, scissors. Mm-hmm. So at its core, it is just a paper, rock, scissors. You pick someone to play paper, rock, scissors with. But it's kind of like a pressure luck. You're trying to get their points from them, trying to eliminate them. And when you eliminate them, they're out of the game. And so it's a lot of just, you know, this is a game that I think would go great with alcohol.
Right. I can see that. And also, did you set that up for us really nicely by saying paper, rock, scissors? I'm just asking.
Oh, for the love of
it. Or was it paper, scissors, rock that you just said?
Can't people say things in different orders? Rock, paper, scissors.
But we just really threw both of us when we heard it earlier. I know. We were like,
we're both like looking at each other like, is that the way it's supposed to go? Yeah. I don't think it is. It's rock, paper, scissors.
Everyone knows it's rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the originality. It's just
even in the book, it's Pyramid Chambeau is a tournament style Rochambeau, also known as rock, paper, scissors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. And this concludes our Let's Pick on Chris segment of the evening.
We warned him beforehand.
We did.
And you set up really nicely for us. So thank you for
Thanks, Chris.
You're welcome. You're welcome. glad I could be of service. Kitty, do you want to talk about Pharaoh?
Sure. We played the 4-player version of this, but it can be played 2, 3, or 4 players. It is played on the 4x4.
5x5
grid. and what you're trying to do is get 3 in a row and control the middle square of the board in your color.
Yep.
So you roll 2 dice. And you take the higher die as your movement value. It costs 1 to move your small pyramid, 2 to move your medium pyramid, and 3 to move your large pyramid onto the board. And each square movement they go. And you're basically just trying to, in a 2-player game, make a line. In the 3-player game, you can make a line either direction. You can make a vertical or horizontal line.
Like the plus.
Yeah. Either one of those. And then in the 4-player game, you can make any line or any diagonal as long as you're controlling the middle portion of the board. And you can move people out of the way by knocking them out of the way by having your movement through them. But you cannot move through a pyramid bigger than yours.
Yeah, so you can't move through a pyramid bigger than yours. If it's equal or smaller, you kick it off the board if you try to move through it.
You kick off the board and it never comes back?
No, it'll come back.
It can move back. Okay. Yeah. But you have to use your hips movement to move it. Your movement.
So you have a side of the board and you're just moving your pieces on there. Deceptively simple. Mm-hmm. But again, you have to pay, especially when you're playing 4 people, you have to pay attention to what everybody's doing.
Right.
I was not very good at this game. Yeah.
It's super colorful because you have like 4 colorful pyramids on top of this whiteboard and it looks just really cool. Another game where like it takes about 30 seconds to learn and then people are like, oh, okay, I get it.
And now how does it feel? Is it like kind of just a fun little thing or is it kind of more competitive, like a Risk thing?
It is competitive. It's a King of the Hill game.
Right.
So Pharaoh, I wonder if I always want to get as much of the flavor as I can in here.
Sure.
but basically, historical notes. Longtime players of this game, what we call it, we use... that's not that useful. Pharaoh is a simple strategy game focused on control of the middle square and the 2 of either sides of it. The struggle for this central point has a King of the Hill feel to it, so we named it after King of the Pyramids, i.e. Pharaoh. So it is that control of the center, and you're like, oh, I'm going to move to the center, but as soon as you're at the center, everyone's gunning for you.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So you have to like... stay on the outskirts, stay under the radar until you can make
your
that
other pieces.
Final push.
It reminds me a little bit of the Connect 4. I got a diagonal.
Exactly.
Like, you want a surprise, like, ha-ha, and now I did it.
Right, yep. right.
So, and you get to the point where you start looking out. It's like, okay, if Kitty rolls a 5 or a 6, she wins unless I can knock her off the board. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, so as soon as people start having, like, if they roll this, they can win the game, then mm-hmm. you have to start gunning for them. But then it's like, well, or I could put myself in a good position and just hope they don't roll a 5 or a 6. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so the historical note here is it used to, when the game was first came out, one of the great things about this is a lot of the rules mm-hmm. in this box have been revised mm-hmm. and kind of not necessarily streamlined or simplified, but just made better for whatever reason.
Right.
So this particular game, you used to not be able to move to the corners of the 5x5 grid. Okay. And they decided, it's like, that's a rule that just doesn't matter. Like, we can right. remove it. It doesn't change the game. And so now it's just an easier game to learn
yeah.
and another rule mm-hmm. you don't have to pay attention to.
Nice.
So it's those kind of things. And there's a lot of notes in the game like, oh, well, it used to play like this and we did this. Mm.
That's a smart move.
Yeah. Let's see. Josh, have you played Ice Dice? Do you remember it enough?
I'm going to cede this one to you, Chris, because I'm worried I'm going to mess this up. You've put the fear of God into me about explaining a couple of weeks back.
I know. Chris just likes to set us up and then like sit back and watch us struggle yeah. to explain games.
I'm just giving you guys the opportunity to be better. I think that's a good thing.
Okay.
So Ice Dice is a game where you have a stack of 5 different colors, 3 trios of each one. So 3 big blues, 3 big purples, 3 medium blues, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. And you're going to roll a colored die and a pyramid die. And you're going to put that out into the middle of the table. So if you roll a red medium, then you take a red medium from the bank. Mm. The trick is you can keep rolling for as long as you want to collect as many pyramids as you want.
This one.
Yeah.
But if you ever roll the same color twice, you bust and you have to put all the pyramids back in the middle of the bank. And that's essentially the game. You are trying to win condition. You need 3 monochrome trios to win. So 3 reds, 3 purples, 3 yellows of each of one size.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So small, medium, and large of each color.
Yep. And that's the whole game. So it's this press your luck style game. Mm. Now, there are some rules about if you you can't pull from the bank, you can steal from other players and things like that. So there's a lot of interactivity. You're not just pulling from the bank. Mm. But it's another game you could learn in a matter of a few minutes and just play.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this one's 2 to 3 players. You know, just keep going. Let's see. I'm trying to cover as many as we can before we go to the mother of them all,
which is
Launchpad. We played Launchpad.
Oh, we should talk about Launchpad. Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
It's a little bit reminiscent of Twin Win, where it is, but this one is a square board. And you can, so you roll to see what pops up into the factory, is the middle of the square. And then you get either 2, 3, or 4 moves, depending on how you roll. And you are trying to build a rocket, which is, so there are 5 colors in the game, and you're trying to build a rocket of one of each color of the same size. So a little rainbow of one, rainbow medium, rainbow large size.
Stacked on top of
each
other.
On your launch pad.
On your launch pad.
So you can move pieces onto your launch pad or onto somebody else's launch pad. You can move them off of your launch pad, but you cannot move them off someone else's. Hmm. So there was a lot of strategic messing with people by like, oh, I see Chris is getting close.
Yeah.
Plop one on his.
And it's just like a 3x3 board as well. So I can imagine you're just constantly interacting with each other and knocking each other off.
Yep.
It was almost equal parts strategizing to help me and mess with other people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like, right down that line.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and the other thing that's interesting with this one, too, is the number of moves you get will vary based on what you roll to get the piece in the middle.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So, you could roll a color or a wild on the color die, or you could roll a 1 or 2, basically, pyramids on the pyramid die. So, if you roll a double pyramid side and a wild colored side, you could get 4 moves that turn.
Ooh.
Where if you just rolled a blue with a small pyramid, you just got 2 moves that turn. So
I'd say most of the moves end up being 2, but those like 3-4 moves could really help you out. I think that's why Chris won that one, is that he ended up with a 4 move roll that if he had only had 2 moves on that one, somebody else would have messed with him on that next turn and it wouldn't have been a win.
Yep.
So.
All right. We're to it.
Oh my goodness. Homeworlds.
So most of the games in this book are 1 to 2 pages in description.
Yep.
And that's with some flavor to it and a lot of times strategy tips. Homeworlds starts on page 20, goes to 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27.
But hang on, we're scaring people off here because that sounds like an extremely complicated game. Whereas the actual moves that you have to do in the game are very simple and you can pick it up fairly quickly.
Yeah, and I teach a lot of people this game. It's best to teach them while they're playing it. And yes. I pick certain moves for them to make in front of them. And then we'll kind of start in the middle.
Yeah.
But there really are only 4 moves and 2 special moves in the game. The game is played with 4 different color pyramids, traditionally red, blue, green, and yellow. Mm. Each one of them allows you to do something. Green allows you to grow. And to grow, you simply say, this ship is going to grow another ship of its color. Mm. And you take the smallest ship from the bank and you put it out. The bank is made up of 3 trios of each of these colors. Mm-hmm. The next one is blue. Blue allows you to trade colors. Well, I have a yellow ship. I want to change it to be a red ship. As long as there's a same size ship in the bank of that color, you can trade that as long as you have blue, access to that power of blue. Mm-hmm. Yellow is the power of movement and is probably the most complex of all the powers. Mm-hmm. So your star system, your home system, is made up of 2 upright pyramids and typically of different sizes. And your opponent's is also the same. You can move to any other star system that has a pyramid, upright pyramid in it, that doesn't match a size of a system you're coming from. Mm. So if I have a medium and a large in my homeworld, I can only move to small star systems. Mm. But when I'm moving, there's no star systems on the board to start with. They only exist when I need them to exist. Mm. So when I move to a small star system, I pull that small star system from the bank.
So you're creating stars as you move out.
Yep, as you need them. Every system you create the outside of your home world is a single star system. So that's smalls there. That small system, you can move to any system that has a medium or a large star in it. Mm. You create stars as you need them. As soon as there's no ships there, those stars go away. You can also move to a star that an opponent's at.
And so the board is then constantly expanding and contracting and wow.
Yeah. Based on whatever you need it to be at the time. Mm-hmm. Red is the attack power, but I put that in kind of air quotes because you really, when you think attack, you think A, I need red to win. Mm. You don't need red at all. And B, you think attack means destroy. Mm. Really what red is a takeover power. Mm. If you have the power of red, a ship of yours can take over another ship of your opponent's of equal or lesser size.
In the same star
system? In the same star system. Mm-hmm. So they just take it and it's theirs.
Sure.
The other 2 special moves, one is the catastrophe, which is the way you actually do destroy things. Mm. If ever a star system has 4 of the same color pyramid in it, whether it be your opponent's, yours, the star itself, whatever the case, you have the opportunity on your turn, anytime during your turn, to call a catastrophe. And all those pyramids go back to the bank. Mm. If it also includes the star, then... and there is no star left, then every ship that was at that star also goes back to the bank, destroying everything. The final one is the sacrifice. Mm. Now, normally you can only use a power if it's available at a star system you control, either granted to you by the color of the star or a color of a ship you control. Mm-hmm. But if you sacrifice a ship, you get to use its colored power. So if I sacrifice a yellow, I get to use movement. If I sacrifice a blue, I get to use change a number of times equal to its size. So if I sacrifice a large yellow ship, I can move 3 of my ships anywhere that I control them. I can make 3 movement to 3 turns of movement.
So you could move 3 ships in that scenario into their star system with the same color as those ships and then blow it up.
And call it catastrophe. Yeah. So that is the whole game. That's the game. Now, it does take a little bit of wrapping your mind around. If anybody listening that had any concept of what I was talking about, I would be surprised.
Yeah.
But if you watched a game with that explanation, you would start to put together what's going on in that game.
And I mean, going high level, it really does feel like chess, but it feels, once you understand it, it feels simpler than chess and yet just as complex because that, like we were saying before, the board is constantly expanding and contracting and there's so many different moves you could do, all very simple moves, at any one time that the possibilities are endless. And so it is this deep strategy game of all the information and moves that I could do and my opponent can do are out there, but can my brain wrap it around what? Oh, it's just like the battle of minds, and basically Kitty's falling asleep.
I was going to say, I need like a snooze button over here, snore button.
She's been rolling her eyes for like 20 minutes.
And it's only been 4 minutes since we've been talking about this.
Yeah.
She knew it was coming.
I did. Yeah, maybe it's just that Chris keeps trying to explain this game to me after 9 p.m. Maybe it's just not my style game. Maybe I haven't actually sat down and played one through, but I don't know. It just puts me to sleep.
It's a play it to understand it kind of game.
Mm. It doesn't sound fun.
If you liked chess at any point in your life, you liked playing a game of chess and you were interested in that, and by that expression that nobody can hear, I'm going to say that it's a no for Kitty.
I'm not a big chess fan.
But I will say, if anyone has ever played a game of chess and said, that was kind of cool, I wish I were better at it, don't play chess again. I mean, you can if you like it, but you don't need to. Play Homeworlds. Because you get that same feeling out of it, but you also, somehow it feels, it's just more engaging to me. The interesting thing about chess is when you take a piece, it's off the board. And it's really never going to come back.
Yep.
Like, unless you're playing some variant version of chess. So eventually you're getting down to, like, there's no pieces left. Homeworlds, the entire galaxy can reset. And then you start building up again.
Yeah.
Because that's just the way that particular game went. I taught a guy to play it this weekend, a friend of ours, and this is the game that I just said, you know, early at the show that he played this and ran off to buy the game. That was a 2-hour game.
Yeah.
And there are multiple times where I'm like, okay, if you make that move, I do this and this and you lose. So let's reverse it. And
as a way to teach him
as a way to teach it,
strategy,
right. But at the end, I'm pretty sure he had me beat.
Right.
Like, we ran out of time. We had to, like, call it.
Yeah.
But I'm like, all right, I don't see a way out of this. Granted, I think I've beat you 2 or 3 times up to this point, but I still feel like I want to actually have a legit win here, and I don't think I have it.
That's awesome.
You know, so that's...
And the other thing to mention is that Andy Looney loves this game.
Yes.
I mean, the creator of this Pyramid Arcade of so many games, this is his favorite, right?
Yeah. He says this is his favorite game, period.
And so when... You played him. Which convention was it?
So I've played him 3 times. Sydney and I played him at Gen Con. And we beat him there, but with a little asterisk. A, Sydney and I were both playing against him, and B, he was playing against 9 other people of different games at that time. So
that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. So I rematched him at Game Hole Con, and we played twice. We had set up a time Sunday at lunchtime, and we played 2 games. The first game, I was just... I was basically starstruck, I think.
Yeah, because
I'm like, I'm worried about all these strategy elements I'm normally not worried about. Normally, I just like play my game. But I'm like, he's managing the bank, and he's making sure that if I was to take a medium, he could take a big right after that. I'm like, oh, I don't want him to have any bigs. Totally destroyed my play style.
Right.
And before I knew it, I had 4 ships, and he had like everything else.
Wow.
And he's like, it's going to take me a few turns to beat you, but you could just concede, and we could start over. I'm like, that seems like a legit... thing.
Yeah.
Let's do that. The second one I put up a little bit better of a fight. Still not nearly as good. So another rematch is on the horizon.
Yeah, I mean, you just needed to get those out of the way. You know, you were nervous. You know, you just wanted to suss him out. I think you'll be looser next time. And the good thing is, if anyone does beat him, what happens?
You get a medal, an actual like medal of valor type of medal. It's like a ribbon and a medal hanging off of it that pins to your shirt.
Wreck-It Ralph style.
Yeah, Wreck-It Ralph
does
style.
It,
yeah.
Does it say I am the best because I beat Andy Looney? Is that what it says?
I don't know. I've not actually won it yet.
Oh, man. That was another reason why you were too nervous, because you were thinking about the medal.
It was all in my head. It's such a shame. So, all right. We are running close to time. So, final thoughts on Pyramid Arcade. Josh, what do you think?
I mean, it's an amazing achievement, you know, what he's created here. And like we said about the quickness of picking up these games, you know, you can just learn a bunch of them so quickly and play them. I love that fact. I think it's really inclusive and brings people into games that, you know, aren't kind of hardcore gamers.
Yeah. Kitty?
I think it's a really fun game to pull out at a party with a bunch of people. I'm not sure that I'm all in for the hardcore strategy games. I went to bed at that point, but I really enjoyed a lot of the more fast-paced, because they are still strategy games. They're just not as intense. There aren't as many possibilities. There's more little things
going on. But you liked World War V, and World War V is probably on the top three of the most strategic games in the box I've played so far.
Yeah,
but
she likes Risk, that's why. I do. Yeah. She was like, this is Risk, I'm fine
with
this.
It's Risk, yeah. I don't know, it did bring different elements to it, but it was Risk-like enough that maybe that's what won me over, as the familiarity of the board setting didn't throw me off the way that the made-up board need to build stars. If a ship's there, it doesn't exist. Like, catastrophe. All
right. We'll keep you away from Homeworlds. But the fact that, 18 of the other games.
It's a totally fun game. And it has so much stuff to it that, you can get it and just play one game for a while. And then, I was like, oh, yeah, there's all these other ones. Because I feel like I would get caught up. Chris has been very good at making us, all right, we played this one, let's play this other one. And, moving us along in the book. I would have been like, all right, I want to replay this one now. I still want to go back and play Launchpad again.
Yeah, well, now we have, we've played pretty much all the games. And that's what we're going to be doing from this point on. Is we, have a few minutes to kill. Let's do this. Or,
We have to get back to our Pandemic Legacy, though.
We will get back to Pandemic Legacy. if, those who listen often will realize we didn't actually have a game of today. It's because we had, six of them before we started recording.
All Pyramid Games.
All Pyramid Games. They say the off-topic, on-topic sort of blended together.
That's fine. But so what are your last, leaving points on the arcade?
I love it. I will likely purchase two more boxes. I'm not sure if I will give them both away as gifts. One of them will at least go to the family to be kind of the replacement for Parker Brother games. This is the game to pull out if you want to entertain the kids.
Nice.
Don't leave it on the floor though. You may.
Oh yeah, these have yourself. A very Lego-like Sharpie.
Yeah, ouch. These ones are blunted in the Pyramid Arcade box. Mm-hmm. The older versions of the pyramids are much sharper.
They're still pointy. Yeah, but I wouldn't step on them.
You don't want to step on them, especially the small ones. It's like stepping on a D4. But I really love it. It's so easy to teach people a few games here and there. Here, try this. Here, try that. And I have yet to teach a game where people didn't have fun. Because most of these games, they don't outlive their welcome. They're short enough where you have fun with them and then the game's over. And if you you don't have time to get bored with it or not like it, it's just oh, that was cool. Let's play that again. Or let's try what's another one that you can do.
And it's so versatile that you can just switch out to a completely different type of game.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There's so many different styles. Mm. There's strategy games. There's definitely more fast-paced, randomized games. Any person that you have at a table, you can say, there's a game for you in this box.
Definitely. Yep.
So, I really, truly enjoyed it.
Me too.
All right. So, on that note, Josh, this is our new exit loop as you take us out.
Sure. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we always want your feedback. So, email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. You can reach us directly on Twitter. I'm at Josh's Blonde. Chris is at Game Master Chris, and Kitty is at Kittenelle. Of course, you can always leave us a post on our Facebook page, Google Plus group, or our BoardGameGeek.com pages. And as always, we'd like to thank Tristan Dunman for our cover art. She can be reached on Twitter at Tristan Dunman. Until next week, when we talk about gaming groups, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night.